and they do it right.
You got Lee, one of these, that looks like he belongs.
Yes.
Do you want to, do the public notice before we actually get into anything?
Sure.
We just need to note, make it known that the agenda and the notice for this meeting was done.
Public notice was posted on Monday, May 7th, 2018, at 12:36 PM. Okay. Is this because...
It's a new requirement.
Because we got let down once?
Nope, nope. This is just a new requirement that we'll have to do every meeting. We just take it from the top, you know.
Just to acknowledge that the public notice was posted.
Yep. We're in compliance with the requirements of the notice.
All right. It's just we don't want to repeat a meeting with no public notice.
That's the city requirement.
Yep, no, it's just a city.
The requirements, so you gotta do it.
We want to bring in Acadian, or do we have anything before we start?
Penn Square? Is it Acadian or Penn Square?
Penn Square.
Okay.
No, okay.
I'm like, well, we noticed it.
Am I reading the run? I am. Sorry.
That was last meeting.
Penn Square, last meeting. Yeah, now I see.
Yes, I'll bring them in. Just a quick comment before they come in. They're a current manager of yours, so they're gonna talk about, the current fund that you have with them. They're gonna also talk about a new fund offering. What I passed out was our write-up about that new fund offering. It's a little different than what you currently have, so, they'll be talking to folks of that.
How much do we have with them? How's it going?
Yep. So you actually have two investments with them. So if you look on page 13 of the report, which, sorry, the page number sort of cut off, but if you, page 13, you can see the funds in there. So, Penn Square, that's the first one you invested in. Under real estate, did you see that there? And so you committed $2 million. They didn't draw it all down. They've distributed most of it, well, all of your money back plus some, and you still have about $500,000 in that investment. That'll come back to you. Town Square was their next fund. Sort of changed names. They had a different partnership with Town Square, but still Penn people. You committed $3 million to that fund. They drew 1.8. It's worth 2.2. So both funds have done well. They'll go over that. And then they have a new offering, which is actually with Clarion, which is what this market focuses up, you know, about, which we'll talk about when they sort of leave after they present. If you flip to page 20, that shows you how they've done. And when you look at IRR returns, remember, when you look at closed-end real estate, which is real estate that has a finite life, that means you put your money in, you get your money back, then the fund's over, you look at this since inception IRR as opposed to each year by year or anything because of the way the flows of the money in and out come. So 13% for the first fund and 12.74 so far in that next fund that you've had with them, which is what we expected from them. That's what they told us they would do with that fund. So it's done well. So I'll get them unless there's other questions.
And this is your opinion.
This is done by a research group, Linda McDonald, and so she puts a summary in the back, so you always can skip to the summary if you don't know that, but we'll talk about it more.
Okay.
Okay?
Great.
Good, I'm good. I'll have you right here.
All right. Throw my umbrella there.
How's everybody doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Pass those out for you?
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll start with this. This is the information on your existing investments. Yeah. That way. We have the notches. Treasure that back down to the wood. Well, I was saying, I drove up from St. Pete this morning. I left at 5 because it was pouring rain. I didn't know, you know, rain down here is like snow up north. Everybody drives over there.
What do we have from the time?
20 minutes, 25 minutes. Go over your current products, and then if you want to give us a source snapshot of what the new offering is, that'd be great.
All right, great, great. So what we have in front of you here is a highlight book that focuses on the two investments that you have, two real estate investments through Penn Square. So we'll start with that there. Results have been very strong. That's the last time I reported, and they continue to be strong. Nice thing now is since the last time we came here, there's been a lot of distribution activity. So I think the best thing would be to start on page 3, and again, just highlighting the two investments. Both of them are focused on opportunistic type returns in the private real estate market. Penn Square Global Real Estate Fund 2, we closed in March of 2010. And since that time, we've returned well over 146% of contributed capital. So if you look at page 4, which is, I would say, the most important page because that's your actual accounts. For this investment, the City of Ocala made a commitment of $2 million. We called 61% of that, so that's $1.22 million. You'll be calling no more additional capital here on that investment. This information, just so you know, and I forgot to mention, is through third quarter. Ironically, as soon as I finished it up, fourth quarter information came out. So I'll give you some stats there. Distributions through the third quarter were $1.6 million with a remaining of about $500,000 of remaining value there. Actually, to date now, as of today, this afternoon, you'll be getting another distribution. So I couldn't bring the check with me, but we'll be in the account there. So you're at $1.789 million return. So contributed $1.22 million, you've returned $1.789 million on that investment, and that's being held at that's about approximately 140% of contributed capital there. So, you know, performance has been strong, and just to, you know, emphasize again, where we got a lot of the performance in this investment was from secondary positions, where we bought positions from distressed LPs at the time. If you remember, when we were raising the money during this time, it was just after and during the global financial crisis. So I give the board and your consultant a lot of credit for making an investment in a time where a lot of people were sort of still hiding, to say the least. We're tracking to do probably about a 1.9 equity multiple altogether on this, and the rest of this investment should wind down here over the next 2 years. So by 2020, we should be pretty significantly wound down there. Again, when we talk about secondaries, were a big winner for us. Co-investments, we did two co-investments in here, both big winners. Those positions alone, the co-investments returned over 2 times your capital invested, and the secondaries over 2 times. So for every dollar you contributed, we return $2 to you in those investments. And we'll continue to see pace there. Another big benefit for this portfolio is that we overweighted the U.S. to the non-U.S. Right now, areas that are hurting the portfolio would be our investments in Brazil. A lot of that has to be currency related for a long time. But recently it's been the delay in some of the residential properties down there. With the two investments in Brazil, the one, Prosperos Nos, is one where we had a lot of development. And so as we get later in the cycle, as we get later into the investment, it's sort of backloaded, meaning that, you know, we're putting money out to build their residential and then we have to sell them. That's been a delay. So in the fourth quarter, they took a pretty strong markdown. But the good thing being diversified with multiple investments, it's not going to hurt the overall portfolio as well. As we continue to see, we'll continue to see distribution activity. The most recent one that you're getting today, a lot of that is coming back from your investment in Exeter Industrial. Industrial is a big theme. It's one I'm going to be talking about our new offering here. I saw where you have a Chewy distribution center going up there. I'll talk to you about that. There's some really interesting facts about e-commerce there. So that's an area of excitement there. Any questions on that investment within Penn Square 2?
I remember
you don't want to go on to the next one, okay? Thanks. It's always easier when you're positive. So if we look at Penn Square 3 or Town Square Real Estate Alpha Fund. Again, the same thesis. As we evolve, we continue, Penn Square in our mind, we continue to try to keep evolving our investment vehicles. Our first investment vehicle was a fund-to-funds vehicle. Our second one was a fund-to-funds with some secondaries and some co-investments. Our third vehicle here was a lot of JVs, co-investments, and some secondaries there. Again, performance continues to be very strong. We closed this investment in December of 2013, December 31st, 2013. We called 58%, just over 58% of capital, of your capital. With both of these two investments, we don't see any additional capital being called, just as a FYI there. So from that standpoint, from a pacing standpoint, just understand that committed capital that's out there will most likely not be called there. So if we go to page 14, which is, page 16, I apologize, which is the breakdown of your commitment. You made a total commitment of $3 million. We called $1.7 million. Distributions through third quarter were $700,000. Actually, so I'll give you the updated numbers. So distributions through this last Friday, you're over $1 million, $1,047,000. Again, that's approximately 60% of your contributed capital, so you're well on to getting full return of capital in this investment here. Again, the advantages when we look at the next page, which is the performance breakdown, you'll see a couple areas that we really focused in on. Number one, we focused in on, again, U.S. versus non-U.S., being overweighted there. We focused in on some interesting, I'll call them subsectors of investments. One of them, very successful ones for us, was the Stockbridge Manufactured Housing Portfolio that we returned about a 1.8 multiple there. Just shy of 20% IRR. And again, living in Florida in the southeast, affordable housing and options like that, there's a lot of interesting areas in the mobile and manufactured home. Stockbridge is an operator. This wouldn't be, as I told people in the past, this wouldn't be your local owner who has, you know, a couple acres of land and has some single wides on there and renting them out. These are actually beautiful country club-like amenities with clubhouses. Some of them have golf courses, ponds, pools, and you know, they have the ability to come in and either rent a pad to put there. They buy an existing manufactured home on the site, etc. And that's become a big business. We were lucky to get in and get out there, a pretty quick turnaround, so it was successful. Other areas that's done really well for us, residential apartments, and then a couple of our offices. We really did really well in the location of some offices in New York City on 110 William Street. If you ever go to New York City, I can take about 2 days of being in New York City, and then I sort of want to come back to a little bit more space. But there's a new transit center, the Fulton Street Transit Center, that just opened up off the path there, which has turned this area into a really hotbed, and we were able to get in with some really nice operator, Savannah, and do really well in that 123 William Street. So 123 Williams, we've already sold at a 2x multiple. 110 William Street, you know, we're at 2.6 right now. We could get as possible as a 3x on that one. We just, the first floor of that building, the long-term renter, it's retail space, well below market, has decided not to come back and renew. So we think we can release that at a very high market or above market type rents, which could get us to a 3x on there. So again, performance has been strong.
Can you talk a little bit about your international exposure here, and specifically your Asian investments?
Sure. So here, what we have is a lot in Europe. So Carval, Project Villanueva, are European investments. From an Asian investment, I love this name. It's UK, Chinese Logistics. I kind of asked them if we can maybe get a difference. UK sounds a little more forward. I don't know. I was hoping we could try to change that out. But that was actually an industrial. That was built to suite industrial assets. So Chinese Logistics are 20, 30 years behind ours. So we built these very quickly, these 22 projects, and we actually listed that on the Chinese exchange. So we've gotten full return of our capital already. And we're looking to close that out here in the next year as we sell all the remaining shares of that from that standpoint. But the other investments, UPay is the Asia exposure there. Fortress Japan, that's really a loan type. Buying mezz positions and other types of loan positions inside of existing buildings in Japan have done well. And everything else is in Europe. And a lot of that is focused in on two main areas, the UK and then also in Paris and the more major type cities. So from a UK standpoint, about a year ago, year and a half ago, we had some slight write-downs or unrealized write-downs. It was more of a what's going to happen with the Brexit exit, and as of today, we still don't know what's going to happen with the Brexit exit. It's sort of, before it was doom and gloom, it was on the reality is that the UK does so much business with Europe, it's going to have to make this thing work there. So, really neat project in this portfolio is Project Villanueva. That's in Italy. It's actually, we bought this as from a family and from a bank. It was a portfolio of embassy and other mansions located where the embassies are in Rome. And so this was a private family and a bank, and they sort of wanted to get out of this business. We were able to bring this together into one portfolio. And what we're doing is we've got three of the embassies already leased to countries that want to move in there. A couple of the mansions, we're converting them into sort of condos and apartments. A unique area, we've got the buy-in of the local municipalities there. So it's a pretty cool project. But again, that's a wonder. There's a lot of CapEx going into it. So we're holding it at cost, below cost, and sort of the back-ended on the returns there. So that's kind of neat. I was hoping I could do an on-site tour, but I can't seem to get that approved. I don't know why. So that's the JVs and co-investments work well through the fourth quarter, we had a nice, another positive quarter for this portfolio. We're now running at a 1.77 equity multiple, so almost 1.8, so a nice increase there. Distribution activity should pick up here in the next year or so. Like I said, we've returned over 60% of your contributed capital. Probably next year and a half, we'll get back to 100% of your return capital and profits after that. So, again, targeting into the 1.9, 2x multiple there. So, again, timing of this portfolio has been quite good. Again, coming out of the global financial crisis, and again, our evolution to where we want to go from being an allocator to working with an operator, and that's sort of where our theme has been there. Trying to think of any other interesting areas there. Yeah, we talked about Loma Lava, we talked about 110 William, 123 William. Oh, another interesting one is the Dune Las Vegas. It has actually five properties, about 1,400 unit condos that were built prior to the global financial crisis and then kind of got in trouble. They converted them into apartments, we were able to buy it at a very, very steep discount, and now we're reconverting them back to condos as Las Vegas has come back and become popular again. So we sold one big, about a third of the portfolio to one buyer on that condo exchange, and we continue to see that. We should be by 2019 completely converted back from condo to apartment back to condo in Las Vegas. Again, you know, try to get an on-site visit. And then, Noble One, which is in Penn Square 2 and Penn Square 3. Again, great operator out of Atlanta. When you think of Noble, they're a hospitality operator, hotel operator. But think in terms of extended stay or service hotels. So like your Hilton Gardens that you're doing downtown. So I tell people, think of a Hilton Gardens, not a full-fledged Hilton. Think of a Courtyard Marriott, don't think of a Marriott or a JW Marriott or a Ritz-Carlton. So they're focused around centers that are the big two key areas that they look for are either educational centers, so we look around colleges, so around Gainesville, around Athens, Georgia, colleges, or medical centers, medical research centers, where people have a tendency to possibly stay for an extended period of time. And with colleges, no matter where the economy is, beginning of the flow. Moving forward with hotels, we would be a little bit leery. I'm glad that Noble is selling out of theirs, just as, you know, if we do get a slowdown in the economy, that would be one area, because it's the first area to get cut when it comes to expenses. Travel is the first area, so we're kind of leery away from hotels there. That was really quick, but again, positive results. Tracking towards, you know, full return of capital for your investments here by the end of this year, beginning of 2019, and then wrapping this up in late 2020, 2021. So both of this big theme coming out of this, you'll continue to see distribution activity coming back to you, to your pensioner from these commitments that you made starting in 2009, 2010. Any questions, comments?
Good.
All right. So, we're actually launching our... We decided to save money and print small. I'm getting mixed reviews. Some people love it. Some people like me, where I've noticed that I have to go to the Progressive. Can't keep taking it anymore. You find it's interesting. So we are launching our fourth, Penn Square 4, U.S. real estate fund. We are excited because we've made some unique changes that we think, we heard back from our LPs and we think are going to be well received. We are working with Clarion Partners. They're a major private real estate investment firm out of New York with over $47 billion in AUM, assets under management. And we wanted to move from being an allocator to where we're actually working with the operator. Clarion's sole job is to make money for their limited partners. I mean, that's their sole job as a real estate operator, and we're excited to be working with them. And so the structure of this fund, and I guess the easiest way to look at it would be to go through all this. If we go to page 4 is, and page 5, we open it up, is this is going to be a total return fund. We're targeting value-add returns, so net 11-12% net, so a little bit lower than our prior funds. And again, just from where we are in the cycle and what we believe is we want to be conservative in our approach versus over-promising and under-delivering. So this fund will focus in on two main areas. One is established open-ended real estate funds and exposure to Clarion's approximately $20 billion and 700 properties. So a nice stable foundation. And then the rest, and what I'm really excited about, is doing 8 to 12 direct equity / credit type opportunities. So direct, you know, being directly involved in 8 to 12 direct properties. There'll be a heavy emphasis on multifamily and on industrial assets. And when we say industrial, we're talking about e-commerce. So I was glad to see, because it makes my explaining real easy. So a lot of people hear industrial and they're thinking, okay, Jeff, you're going to be making a manufacturing, you know, a coal plant or manufacturing plant somewhere. No, what we're doing is we're really working a lot with e-commerce and logistics. So if you look at the existing industrial assets or logistics centers out there, a lot of them are very old. I mean, they're getting up there. The big peak boom of buildings was in the 70s and 80s. So a lot of these properties are becoming obsolete and have to be redone. Well, the fact is with properties like these, you don't really redo them. You kind of knock them down and rebuild them. It's not like that. There's not many classic, you know, beautiful downtown stone structures that you're like, boy, I really want the artistic parts of it and build it into some type of mixed-use center. So e-commerce, everybody's heard of e-commerce. How many are Amazon Prime members? Great. Okay. Well, we just had one open up in Ruskin, Amazon Distribution Center. I can put in an order in at 10 in the morning, and right now, on average, about 3 in the afternoon, I can knock at the door saying, there you go. Even though they say 2 days, 3 days. So for every $1 billion of new sales in e-commerce, we need 1.25 million square feet of new logistics facilities. Okay. Right now, 2017, we have $450 billion of these sales. We're expected to reach over $600 billion in just 3 years, by 2020. Okay, it's revolutionizing. So a lot of people say, well, okay, Amazon, because I like that. I didn't know there. So the average Amazon facility is 600,000 square feet. Okay. So, but it takes 2.9 million square feet of steel to build it. Because whereas in the past you were probably familiar with, you know, first it was sort of the idea was it was a, you know, big open space with the docking where the 18 wheelers to pull back, and you can sort of just slide the materials on and they can move on. Now these are 40, 50 foot high type buildings where you have four levels that includes conveyor belts and robotics that moves because we're moving all this stuff. So Chewy is going to have a whole robotic system to get all the mail orders out there. So this is a booming area. We still see tremendous growth. It's a change in retail that is not going away. I mean, the reality is that most people today would rather take their phone, look at what they want, order it. They might go to a boutique store to go see it and feel it, but the supply that's there is very limited, and they actually just work on more e-commerce logistics centers to get it to the end user. So Clarion is the second largest logistics owner and provider in the country behind Prologix. Amazon is one of their top clients. And these buildings that we're doing, most of them are pre-leased already. They're built specific for somebody, like a Chewy, like an Amazon, like a, what's that one my wife loves? Waypoint, right, the design? Yeah, Waypoint. I mean, these are all, and they're heavy in their robotics and sort of the modeling of them. It's not like a simple throw down concrete, throw it up. So we're going to have a heavy emphasis in that. The other area we're going to have a heavy emphasis in is still multifamily. Multifamily and apartments, the home ownership rates in America are starting to creep back up, but the reality is they're still below what the average is. The two biggest age categories in the United States are baby boomers, which account for about 75 million, and millennials, which accounts for 79 million. So over 150 million people in the U.S. are in those two age categories. Millennials are renters. Okay, they put everything off. The average age of a male now getting married for the first time is now above 30, which is, you know, 25, 30 years ago was in the low 20s. They put off ownership of homes. They don't see a connection with, you know, whereas my father was always told you never lost money in a house, they don't see that connection. I think it's one out of three millennials saw their parents lose their house during the last global financial crisis. So they put this off. The other big area that's interesting is baby boomers. They are more active. They are retiring earlier. No matter what people say, you know, the average age, they talk about, you know, 72 to get full retirement from Social Security. They're checking out a lot earlier, retiring, like, whether forced or whether by choice, they're retiring earlier, and they're moving into apartments. They like apartments. I'll tell you an example. If you come to St. Have you ever been to St. Petersburg? You go to downtown St. Petersburg, there are four or five Class A apartment complexes that are finishing up and coming online. Majority of those renters are baby boomers. They're exiting their home, they're coming down there, they're paying, you know, rents $1,700, $2,100 in downtown St. Petersburg. You can buy, you know, and that's what they choose. So we see this as a, you know, an area that will continue to grow, and we see that, again, there's an obsolescence factor that's involved in real estate. And what you're getting to is where the big construction boom was in the 70s and 80s. And yes, you'll hear a lot of people say there's a lot of construction going on, but it's not hitting those levels that were prior. And we're absorbing everything fine, and we're seeing, you know, demand continue. Here's the other funny thing. And I joke about it with my daughters, because right now 23 million 18 to 34 year olds are still living with their parents. So as this economy's come down, that number's come down, and you know, you still, they're going to get out, and the first thing they're going to do is end up being renters. So we still see a tremendous opportunity to rent. What we're going to be focusing in on is the Southeast and the West. That's the migration of people. You know, there's still great opportunities in the big Northeast cities like Boston and New York, hard to get into. But in general, you're seeing a migration down the Southeast and out to the West for you know, not just tax reasons, but for, you know, weather reasons, etc. The other areas we're focusing on are big growth markets, so employment growth markets. Your Austins, out west, you know, San Francisco, Seattle, you know, Houston's an opportunity because of what happened to their inventory of apartments, which I forgot to mention. A lot of people gave us a little grief because we sold out of our Houston apartments a couple years ago, really quickly, and they're like, you probably could have gotten more out of it. But I'm excited we got out of our recent apartments because we missed the unfortunate circumstances of...
So there won't be any international in this, right? So it's 100% U.S.?
100% U.S.
Okay.
The other area we might do is we still see great opportunities in some short NES positions. So if we can lend at LIBOR plus 8%, we'll take that for, 12 to 24 months. Again, banks have been slow to come back in some positions to lend, so, but that would probably be one or two deals there. So we're really excited about those two, and we're really excited about moving from being an allocator to working with an operator, and that operator being Clarion Partners. Again, pedigree going back to the 80s, well established. They've got,
And talk a little bit more about how that happened. So you're with Town Square, and then, what you sort of decided and what you did to look for Clarion as a partner.
Sure.
And,
Townsend was historically a consultant and an investment manager, so they were allocating, they were underwriting a lot of different operators and allocating money to those different operators there. Townsend, over the last few years, have gone through a couple of ownership changes. One was one where the principal owners went to equitize their position, brought in a private equity firm that bought out 70% of it. The partners remained 30, like any private equity firm. Within a few years, they sold that to another party, North Star, which then started seeing a conflict of interest, and then they sold them again to Aon Hewitt, which is a consulting firm. So we wanted to move away from that allocator and work and partner with an operator. We knew Clarion very well. We had seen their work. Townsend had underwritten Clarion and had invested many, many millions and millions of dollars with their open-ended strategies. They're highly ranked and highly favored. And so we had partnered with them and talked with them for over a year and have come to this partnership where we're co-GPs on this fourth fund. The other thing that we did, two things we heard from our LPs, they like the U.S. investments. They want to stay there. The other area, they want to be more of an operator, meaning closer to dirt. So, your Clarion is buying, managing, and operating these properties. And then the third thing, which is unique, is the structure. We structured this to where we don't have a capital call structure. Because of the use of the open-ended funds, we're able to take your commitment amount. And so as a pacing, and a lot of my consultants have already said they like this, if you commit $2 million, $2 million is going to go to work. We'll go into, when we close, we'll look to, on a short-term basis, invest in our open-ended funds, and as we find those real estate opportunities, roll out and buy those opportunities there. Rick Schopp is going to be your portfolio manager. He's going to manage the portfolio, make the picks, but at the end of the day, the entire Clarion investment team and their investment committee will vote on the buying of the assets and the construction of the portfolio. So, really excited. It's going to be a really, really neat thing. And like I said, with 8 to 12 deals, you're going to be doing some really unique deals that you'll be able to focus in on. As I say, you'll be able to Google up them and say, okay, here we are in, Santa Monica, the deal that they did in Santa Monica where they took an old theater that was owned by a family that was being underrun and changed that to some mixed use where we had some retail on the bottom, some office space on the second level, and some apartments in the back. So taking it, and the city of Santa Monica loves it because it's taking something that was sort of a theater with one purpose, aka a low tax base, to an asset now that has three purposes, office, retail, and apartments. And hence, the tax base on that type of asset is much more favorable for the city. So, any questions on that, or concerns you might have, or ideas? And more importantly, any questions on your existing investments there? Like I said, things are working well, and we're excited. And I'm glad to thank you again for partnering with Penn Square and making those commitments specifically. Penn Square 2, which I think I told you before, my head was bruised from trying to get people to invest, and telling them this is absolutely the greatest time you can invest in private real estate coming out, and so I commend the board and the consultants and Rose for making those commitments there, so it's a great, great opportunity.
I think we're good.
All right. I sent Alicia soft copies of those, so you're all filed there, and then I'll follow up with you then.
Okay, yeah.
If there's any questions, perfect. All right.
Thank you for coming up.
Well, thank you. Coming up, yeah.
Coming up.
Hope that the rain holds off.
That's right, they're always coming down.
Yeah. I'll be around for a few minutes outside if you have any questions.
Thanks, Rose.
Thank you. Good to see you again. Safe travels back. Have a great day.
Sure.
So they've done really well for you, as you can see. There's, you know, more than you can really ask for. I mean, twice your money is always a good thing. They've done really well. This offering's a little different than what they have used to have. So, and when you initially invested with them, a lot of the reason you did, you were a lot smaller then. You had a bigger fund. And so we were looking for somebody who was doing a lot that could give you exposure at sort of, you only had about $2 million to give somebody, and so that was where they were. Our research group, if you read what we sort of wrote, just really thinks there may be better opportunities out there for you now that you're of a bigger size and you're going to allocate more money. Yes, your money goes in sort of day one into these open-ended funds, but one, you already have open-ended real estate in your portfolio. And they're not going to give you the liquidity that open-end gives you. So even though, you know, your dollars go in day one, you can't take those dollars back, right? So, I mean, to invest it in, you're almost sort of getting probably those open-end returns in the beginning before they get those other investments in there. So we think, you know, so it's pretty different than what they had done before. You don't have any of that international exposure. Dune Capital, who they mentioned, is a fund that we have recommended that we rate. So that would be somebody who, you know, we'd be interested in you investing with. Longworth, who you have in here, has another fund coming out. I suspect that's going to be recommended by us and rated, and we want to have you give them some more money. And then, like I said, there's a couple other funds out there that I think probably do a little better than this fund. You know, you hate to say that when somebody's done so well for you,
right.
Like you like to give them more money, but, and then it's, you know, they're raising a $200 million fund, which sounds like a lot of money, but in the sort of scheme of things and where you are, you're going to allocate somewhere between $4 to $5 million to somebody, and their minimum investment's $100,000. This is what we would consider more sort of on the retail side or smaller pension plans than yours, right? And there's sort of a double layer of fees here a little bit too, because you're the way you're paying those underlying funds plus you're paying them and that too, which we don't think you need to do now. You might have needed to do before, but because you're a bigger size, you don't necessarily need to do that either. I mean, on the upside, there's nothing wrong with the investment. I mean, it's a good investment. Clarion's great. We like Clarion, all those things. But again, you already have open-end real estate, you know, and you have opportunities to sort of go direct to get that diversity.
I would recommend those.
Didn't you already hear it?
I don't.
Well, I heard it. She's looking at me, making
an idea. See, the is gone.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, we say it here in our summary, which is basically that, you know, it's an attractive real estate offering for smaller plans, accredited investors with little or no real estate exposure, and limited capital to invest in the asset class. That's not really you anymore. It might have been you before, but...
I said there's other places for us to be.
Right. So you did hear it. You just wanted to hear it one more time, right?
So, that's sort of our thought on that. And we'll bring Longworth to the next meeting so you can hear about what they've done for you and also their next product. You already did that with Westport, so they're really the only one. And then maybe at the next meeting, if you're fine with it, we can bring maybe a couple other real estate managers for you to look at.
So are you kind of recommending that we should put some more funds into real estate?
Yeah, we'll see that when we get to that part of the report, right, too.
That's what I've been hearing.
Well, we have a couple of them that are paying out.
Yeah,
they're paying out now, so
yeah,
they're going to eventually go away. So
we get pretty frequent distributions, actually.
Right.
I said there's another one today. It's about one a month, even two a month.
And I mean, maybe if Fund 5 is different, we could give them money in a, you know, another fund.
Right.
You know, but this fund just doesn't seem to be the same kind of fit the other two were.
And they want to draw it in all instantly and just wait until they accumulate what they're looking for.
Right. Yeah. So that's a little different than what you're looking for, too. So, if we move on to the report, if there's anything there. So you have the reports in front of you. So tab 1, page 1, we'll go over the markets a little bit. It's weird being in May and, you know, having seen you in February when we sort of saw the rocky markets in January and in February, and I talked to you a little bit about that then, and then seeing the end results, and now we're in May, and then April was crazy and May's been a little bit crazy. So but we'll talk about the first quarter. The S&P is up through Friday 2% from the beginning of the year. As you may remember, the markets were up a lot in January, so up 5 or 6% for the S&P. Then they had a really negative February, not great March. April's been choppy. So we've basically seen very minimal volatility in 2017. And then we've seen this huge return to volatility in 2018. Page 1, so world equities was down 1.3%. U.S. equities was down 0.6%, and international equities was down 1.5%. Emerging markets was up, so you did see some positives there at 1.4%. Fixed income was down. International fixed income was up. Commodities was down. Real estate up. Private equity up, and hedge funds slightly up. So you can see, as opposed to when I presented the December report, everything was up. You've seen more mixed results through the first quarter. If you flip to the next page, you can sort of see that, and you can see, you know, the quarter returns there with some of those negatives. And then you can see still on the 10-year number, U.S. equities 9.62 and non-U.S. equities at 2.74. So the international market still has a ways to go to get anywhere near where our 10-year number is on U.S. equities. I'll skip some of these pages. You know, I had talked about the yield curve, and I wanted to, page 6 just tells you a little bit about the yield curve. And I'll remind you, you know, we do have a webinar, and you can go into the straight detail on these. But you can see 331 is that blue line, and I'm glad they made them different colors. Sometimes they seem to be all the same shade of green, and sort of like a test for me or something. But so you can see the blue line is 331 of 17, then that was December, so you really hadn't moved, and then you really are moving. So you see, like, in a year time, you move from maybe a 0.5% or 0.7% on the short end of the curve all the way up to almost 2% or 1%, you know, so a big 1% move. You know, the Fed's been raising rates, so that's basically what you see. On the long end of the curve there, you don't see as much movement. You see a little bit of movement there, but we're getting on the 30-year up to 3%. What that means for you is that when we try to project returns out into the future, when we do your asset allocation,
what cash is doing is important, because you're building off of that, right? So whatever cash does, we're putting a premium on that for other asset classes. We'll go into your portfolio. So on page 13, we like to do, this is versus your policy. You have a policy that you follow. So the left-hand sides are the targets on your policy. You're at $147,622,740. So you've really grown the plan. And that's a lot because it's closed, and so money had to go into the plan, right, to fund these people who are still left in this plan. And as your funding goes up. And we had put some risk controls into your policy with regards to funding. That was something that Bernie had done and wanted us to put in. So we put this little footnote on the bottom left to show what your funding ratio is. Because if your funding ratio gets to a certain level, we'll want to dial down risk even more in the portfolio. So we keep a monitor on that for you and put that in your report quarterly. You're over-allocated to large cap by about 2%, still in your range, so no worries there. Small cap, you're over by about 1%. And international, you're over about 1.63%. So for equities, total, you're over about 4.76%. If that gets a couple more percentages over, we might rebalance, but I don't think you need to right now. As the real estate calls down money and you make new investments, you'll see that come down. Fixed income, your target's at 32, you're at 28, so a little bit under there. Real estate target's at 12.5 and you're at 11.64. And so this is why I say, so you're under by about 1% of the portfolio. So that's about, you know, 1.2 million or something like that. So you'd want to get some allocation there. But if you look, you've got this Long Wharf Fund 5, basically, and so that money's going to come back to you. You got this Penn Square $500,000 that's going to come back to you. You got this Colony money that's going to come back to you, and you got this Townsend money that's basically going to come back to you. So you have a whole bunch of money coming back. And when we look at the UBS returns and things, we're going to probably want to trim that position too a little bit, right? We like that around 5%, maybe even on the lower end of that, because those returns haven't been as good as your other returns. So we may even take that down to 4%. So given that, you probably have somewhere between $5 to $10 million to allocate to new real estate managers. So if Long Wharf comes in, even if you give them $4 or $5 million, you probably have another $4 or $5 million to give somebody else. So that's why I'm saying at the next meeting, let us do a search, we'll bring Long Wharf, because you have money and they've done well for you, but maybe two other managers for you to look at to see as possible places to allocate money. On the alternatives, you're under a little bit there, but no worries, still in your range, and then you have a minimal amount of cash. Page 14, you're actually positive for the quarter, so the markets were negative, but you were positive, the managers did well, and your allocation helped you, so you were up 0.21% for the quarter. Not a lot positive, but we'll take what we can get. The one-year number outperformed your policy, under a little bit on our three-year, five-year, 10-year, and since inception outperformed your policy index, and that's what we're, you know, set to do here. If you flip to page 18, we'll just go through the managers here. So you have Wedge Capital, they've done well. They're outperforming over every period that you've had them at about almost 2% year over year versus their benchmark. So they've done very well. Wellington came out of the gate, and, you know, it was tough getting out of the gate there for them, and so they had a hold of, and they're doing a little bit there to come out of the hole. So they outperformed by over 1% for the quarter, which was good. And as that volatility comes back in, I think you'll see active managers start. As you remember, it was really hard for active managers in 16, 17, some were doing better. And you can see this with the volatility returning. You can see their performance there for the quarter was good. Siegel, Bryan, Hamill doing very well. You can see their quarter, 1 year. And since inception, they're almost above the benchmark now. You know, they've gained a hole there a little bit. Templeton, we go back and forth with them. They have some emerging markets. So when emerging markets do really well, which they did this quarter, and they have for 17 was the best performing asset class, they're going to probably lag a little bit because they don't have as much emerging markets as the ACWI does. And so they did underperform over the periods. We're going to continue to watch them. You know, if we keep seeing some underperformance here, we may switch to another manager. But they've been a really good manager for you to have a diversity of all kinds of international without you having to have multiple managers there, which saves you on fees. Acadian's doing well. You saw them at the last meeting doing very well. Since inception, over 2% above the benchmark. Fidelity's doing well, even though, you know, bonds are going to be negative, and you're going to see maybe some more negative returns there. We don't have huge expectations for core fixed income. Fidelity and double line, though, have been doing very well for you. UBS doesn't have as much leverage as the benchmark. We talked about that before. So they do underperform that. Since inception, they've been able to outperform, but you're going to sort of see them lag because of that leverage that's been able to help in the benchmark with them not having as much leverage. That said, you know, we need more than 7%, 8% from that area. We'd like a little bit more from that. So that's why I'm saying trimming that a little bit from them, maybe taking that down to 4-4.5% will allow us to get the bump from the other real estate managers. Wellington, a little bit under for the quarter, but you can see they strong number since inception. 1 year number, though, a little bit below the benchmark, strong number. We have two benchmarks here. I'm going to get that added. You have T-bills plus 5 plus the 60-40 benchmark. They've done very well. If you remember, we had gotten rid of PIMCO here, added them, and they've done well. Atos had a tough quarter here, underperforming, and you see across the board. And that's where we trimmed them back and added more to Wellington, and we may continue to do some of that, too. And then page 20 is your closed-end real estate funds. As you can see, very well since inception. 2008, you incepted this private real estate portfolio. They've done very well, even though I would consider it I get that it's 10 years old, but it's still a newer portfolio because a lot of these funds are 10-year, 12-year funds, so it takes a while to become a really mature portfolio. But it's done well for you. I think it'll continue to do well, and I think adding a couple new funds in here will help you. And I think that's basically it. Do you have any questions? Oh, and I'm doing, for all my clients I'm working, there's been a lot of compression on fees. You know, you talked in the money management world, there's been compression on fees, so I'm working with everybody's money manager to adjust us fee discounts to try to, you know, push more on the lower fees for our clients. So.
Lee?
Okay, well, we've got good news. From the last meeting, nothing's come out of Washington directed to us, nothing's out of Tallahassee.
No news is good news.
So I do anticipate we'll see something within the next 6 to 9 months. Keep you posted on that. And the only other item which is on the agenda is a note we had sent on verification that all of our consultants have insurance, copies of the insurance certificates. So we should request those so we have a current copy. I think the last time we did it was 10 years ago.
We are in the process of getting letters for all of the managers. So we'll have that taken care of this month. Get something sent out, ask them to, you know, respond within a week or two.
Do we have a consultant that looks at our insurance? Or do we just kind of go by, you know, for the best?
As far as the
making sure that our exposures that are not exposed.
The city has an insurance for the board and the members on the board, and for me and Jessica, it was an errors and omissions
policy.
I'm reminded of that commercial on TV where the fella wonders about his air conditioning or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. and the agent indicates that that's not covered. But what was it, voodoo apocalypses are or something at all.
I mean, honestly, I don't know what all it covers. I can get the information.
Yeah, I would just want to know that this policy really covers our exposures. You know, a doctor's malpractice policy would not deal with our exposures. Our policy would not deal with a doctor's exposure. So I just want to make sure.
Usually you can get your fiduciary insurance agent, whoever you have your fiduciary insurance through, mm-hmm. to come and just give you a whatever 20-minute of
policy
what your,
review.
Mm-hmm, and what your policy is.
Personally, that happened to me when I bought a house. I never looked at raising the insurance value. And I had a sinkhole issue, and they just totaled the house because it cost more to repair it than the value of the house.
I mean, I don't know a huge amount about it.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I get the policy. I fill out the paperwork for all the members and stuff, but I get a copy of the policy.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't read them when they come from the managers either. I just file them away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a huge amount about it, but there is a division at Siegel that does that for boards.
Uh-huh.
You know, Siegel's been doing the Siegel company, our parent, since the 30s. So they have a division that does help boards with that kind of thing, but from what I've seen at other boards, they usually just have their insurance agent, whoever you have it through, just come in and they can ask questions.
Yeah, I know, Lynn, I fill out paperwork every year with the new board members, and we have to give them like this 5 years history and this, that, and the other, but and I have the policy, you know, the information that covers us, I get a signed copy back, but
I just have to check up on her.
And then we want to make sure, too, that they have the income.
She did all the city assets, and I found a couple buildings she forgot to list.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And we've other boards have asked in the past what it would cost to increase, you know, from, I think it's $1 million to $3 million, or, you know, what the cost would be. So I'll get one with them and see if we can get someone to come in.
One other item, which is my annual reminder to you to file your 4-month financial disclosure by July 1st.
Just went and did that yet Friday because I forgot to do it.
And have proof that you did file it because you had to.
Do we have to hand in our proof anywhere? I mean, I've always saved.
No, just keep it for your own.
Yeah,
just keep it for your own proof.
I just happened to look in that drawer and I said, oh, I didn't do 2017.
If for some reason.
I went down there and did it.
They don't have a record of it or something happens, the clerk's office will notify me that these are the members that are still outstanding, and then I'll start emailing you.
Well, I found out from a few years, February's too asking. Early for them. They're not ready for it, but...
Yeah.
And when you say proof, you mean take it and have them stamp it and get
it? Yeah, they
will.
That's the best thing.
That's the best.
If you mail it, be sure that you're certified to receive.
Yeah.
We have had a couple members take it down and do it, and something happened, and they're like, I did it, don't worry about it. Lo and behold, I had to do it again, you know, because they didn't have a record of it. So.
Yeah, I think I had that a couple years ago, and I went and took them. Yes. Stamped copy. You all stamped this.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And they're like, oh, we're sorry.
You know,
they just took a copy of it. Have you all read the minutes? When you asked me where I was late. I showed though, at least that was just late. Okay.
Yes.
My motion is approved on the minutes.
So I'll move that we accept the minutes.
Johnny, second it. I'll sign. We'll have a secretary here. How about the revised ordinance? Have you all had a chance to look at that? Thank you for getting that finally.
Yep.
I know we went through a couple of gyrations, but... Ran it through Doug, absolutely no cost to the pension plan.
And just to remind everyone, this was so that you could pre-select your retirement option before you retire, and we would uphold your election if something happened to you, and it wouldn't default to the 10-year guarantee. So if this passes, goes through, it's, you know, the board can submit it to the city. You know, it's still gotta be approved by council, so just because we do it doesn't mean as a board it'll go through, but you know, I'll forward it to Jared. Jared will hopefully take it to council, and from there we'll notify the members that are still in the plan of the change. We don't have too many members still in the plan. There's like 200.
So they know if I'm missing, they have that option too.
Well, so yeah, you know, I've always said, you know, what if I drop dead? Then, you know, my wife gets my pension for 10 years. It's like, well, why can't I select before? They don't want to give it to her for her life, and it's just never been in there. So basically, we can give the people the ability to choose, and of course, the day they retire, they can change it if things have changed. But
well, do they have to wait until they retire?
No.
That could change it.
We could, you can do that anytime. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that doesn't change anything on the plan.
It has no value to the plan, you know, right. No cost.
So the ordinance is acceptable to the board if the action would be for you by motion to recommend that you adopt the budget. And we need to get a, you mentioned, you talked to Doug, we need to get a letter of action.
Okay. So I make a motion to accept it.
I'll second it.
Okay.
All those four?
Alright.
Any against?
The next thing that's in your packet is the
loyalty oath
that the city has asked us to give to our members, have them, you know, sign and submit it back to them. I asked Lee. Just make sure we were
What caused this to all of a sudden come up?
I cannot answer that question. I just know the city has requested that all of the city's boards and commissions sign this loyalty oath. I'm assuming something happened somewhere along the line.
So do we have a notary here, or do we have to go get it notarized somewhere?
No, me and Jessica are notaries, so if you sign it, we'll take care of the notarizing part. I just forgot to do it.
As Lisa said, she did contact me about this, and we're certainly not required by any state law to do it. It sounds like the city's making a request on pending, but I don't have a problem with it.
In your packet, I provided what the clerk provided to us. It's just some opinions and that kind of thing.
I notice it's not giving me the opportunity to swear.
No.
It's the PC version.
Yeah.
You want to swear at someone?
I don't want to go against PC culture here.
I only knew one board that, in Florida that would, like, I don't know, swear in new members,
you say?
Which was, it was weird to me, as in all my years, the Florida boards had never seen that, but in South Florida, you know.
But anyways,
Probably South Beach or something.
But, and not all the other boards have I seen anybody ever do it.
We have a few that do it, but it's rare.
I said, I don't know the background, but I believe they're using an issue to prompt something.
Something stirred it, yeah.
Yeah, something happened somewhere where the city wasn't covered.
So this probably will now be something that's presented to a board member at his initial meeting.
I mean, we signed one now that we're in HR, but we also signed. Because HR sends us a whole lot of stuff that we.
So we sign them now and then just give them.
Yeah, if you don't mind signing them now and give them to us, I mean, if you do, you can take it to another notary. I'm a notary, I just want my staff upstairs. I don't use a carrot with me when I go somewhere. Jessica's also a notary, so if y'all ever need a notary.
It'd be interesting to hear the background of this, though.
I don't think I'd be privy to my background.
I would like to know where the cause of this. Or who the cause of this. Did you break it yet? Of course, the Attorney General can give that opinion, but it does mention what it was that caused this to all of a sudden.
And then the operating rules, I saw a few things that were striked and a few things were added. Yes.
I do have a question about the insurance.
You do, the underlying and.
Isn't this 175, 185 now? Just for police and fire? It's from, I know it's going to come up later, but does it need to be in the general?
Doesn't it?
Am I in the general? Yes. To make sure, because I'm, yeah. The insurance premium. So I've asked Lee to take out the insurance premium. It's on page 31. It relates to 175, 185, which is fire and police. And then the only other change
you
I.
We may get it one of these days.
Yeah, we may,
I mean,
but.
We should.
And then the only other change I had was on page 12. It refers to the drop. And it's item B. It says that those members can elect Netland investment option. That's not an option anymore. It's from 0 to 3, whatever the plan is making.
Right.
And then prior to that, it was 6.5%.
Yeah, it was a high amount, right.
It was a high amount.
Right.
So that's been changed now, so I've asked them to take that last part out. Other than that,
so that number changes every year.
Yes.
And
depending on what the plan, they can earn from 0 to 3%, but never below 0.
So let's say they stay in for the 5 years.
Uh huh.
3 years are 0%.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth and fifth are 3. What do they get? They the get average?
They get 0 for each of those
0
first 3.
0 for each of the 3.
3
and then
3.
Three for
we
them.
Have the calculation recalculated with each valuation. Or 9:30, whatever the year is, valuation. When Rose gives us her book on 9:30, we then send a couple of pages to Foster.
Mm-hmm.
They do the calculation for everybody that's in the plan for their interest for that year, and that's what they get.
So since Doug is so slow, what happens to somebody who leaves?
That has not been an issue.
Okay.
When Doug said that they applied some more resources
Right.
to Ocala, they have stepped up their...
Good.
We got evaluation on time. We usually get our, anything we've asked for is usually 2 weeks. So.
What was this about the best thing? That it's like zero, and then zero, and then zero, and then it's like what?
When you go into the investment is for the drop. When you go into the drop, you're at normal retirement. So you retire, but you keep working. And your retirement, your years of service, your wages, all of that, for purposes, you're retired in my eyes. The only difference is I'm not sending a check to your mailbox or your direct deposit.
Right.
We're keeping it in the plan. And the plan now says, the documents now say that you can earn between 0% and 3% interest on that money that we're keeping, depending on what the plan earns. So if the plan earns 6%, your peak is in 3% for that year. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't hold true.
That's really not vesting then. It's more...
No.
Yeah.
No.
I'm sorry, because it didn't make any sense about the vesting.
Yeah, and you can stay in the plan for up to 5 years now.
Yep.
Back down to 5 years, so.
And then it's distributed at termination, actual termination of employment.
Yes. Yeah. When you separate, we'll send it wherever you need us to do.
And that can be rolled also.
It can be rolled. Yeah. If you can think about it, a way for us to pay it out, we can do that. Some people have it split, rolled a couple of places,
yep.
and get a little cash, you know.
You treat it like any other lump sum,
yep.
pay it out, it's something
like that. Yeah. We'll give you a 1099 for that that's rolled over that has a certain code. If certain ones are paid out, you know, we give it another code.
Yep.
If you're not 59.5, we give it another code. But we do all that in-house.
So I actually have never seen this document before. So, I don't know. So I'm looking at page. Yeah, and I don't know if I wasn't aware that it. Because, you know, obviously I deal with the investment policy statement, which has a little bit of an overlap here. For some of these things, but if you look on page, and I haven't read this in detail because I'm of course just looking at this, but page 17 under reporting, it says all investment managers and performance monitors of the fund shall report on not less than an annual basis. The investment managers and monitors may, however, blah, 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 blah. All such reports shall be in writing and shall be presented in person by a representative of the investment manager. So I don't know, we used to do annual, and then it says shall make presentations at a regular, and then something here down here says not at least an annual meeting of the board. So I don't know, I mean, I'd have to read this, but I think there's, I just don't want it to say you have to bring all your investment. You obviously review them quarterly, every
right.
manager, but we don't want anything in here. It used to say in your guidelines you had to bring every manager in annually. We took that out of your guidelines, but I don't know.
Right.
This language in here is a little bit. And then down on the bottom of page 17, it talks about RFPs. And I just don't. And then it says it's okay to have a short list, but I don't know. I think that language is a little ambiguous there. Because you don't, for every money manager search you
yeah,
do, you
are.
Don't issue
right.
a public RFP. No Florida plan does, so.
Well, you do it on behalf of the board.
Right. Well, we don't issue a public RFP. I mean, we don't, like, put it in the newspaper or something like that. Like, we
right.
do. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. I mean, they fill out what would be considered a RFP-type document, a questionnaire for us. And then we do a ton of more research, but it's not like it's a
public bid or something.
So we should, do we have to abide by the city's procurement plans as we pick money managers?
We're not using city.
No. We don't use any of those city resources for any of that. Our, the city.
Why don't we use them? I'm just asking, do we have to abide by, you know?
No. What? No.
And no other public plan in Florida has to do that, but for some reason that sort of language is here, and maybe that means more for like consultants and stuff like that, but it talks about managers, like money managers, and that was my confusion there.
But that's what you do on behalf of the board.
Correct.
The board's delegated that.
You delegate that.
And it doesn't require a public request.
And when I read it, I performance monitors, that's what I, it doesn't say things like that, but that's what I read it to be.
Like I said, I'm just looking at it for the first time, so.
So do we want to, look at it, get money?
So. You want to have him look at it one more time? Or we accept it, or what are you thinking, Rose? You want to check the, I mean, so we all agree that, you know, you become the representative for all the money managers. You do the research for us, I mean.
Right, we're meeting with the managers regularly and talking to them regularly and all that kind of stuff. See, it says all investment managers and performance monitors of the fund shall report on not less than an annual basis. And that's that,
well,
where it says investment.
To you, and you, by proxy, bring that back to us. Right?
I mean, my thing is that they're reporting because they're sending you reports quarterly. So for me, that's fine. It's just down here, once then it says the report shall be made in person. Was my just.
So you want that change? Would you feel better? It's only one more meeting. No big deal to put it off a little bit more.
Can we accept it with the change?
Yeah, I prefer it like it is.
Okay, that's fine. Like I said, I was just.
I don't want her leaving with heartburn now.
No, I'm fine.
What about me?
No.
That's your job.
That's a long meeting.
Yeah, we don't want to bring all the money managers in. I mean, it's too time consuming, and it's a waste of their money, and here I am constantly beating up on fees. That would just, you know, be another reason why they got to keep the fees up, you know, because.
I mean, obviously somebody's not doing well, you want to bring them
right
in, but otherwise.
Well, he's done me, Rose, on average, have a manager in at least once a year?
No, not anymore. I mean, we used to do that, but most boards have gone away from that because it's just this very time-consuming, and if somebody's doing really well, and I'm monitoring another meeting with them, there's no point for them to take 30 minutes. And then you have, like, three managers, a meeting,
yes.
You know, and it's like, where?
13 or 14 managers now.
Right.
But it's fine.
Right. So, if somebody's not doing well, we obviously bring them in, but we're meeting with them, we're talking to them all the time. So.
How those meetings usually go? Is it just like a phone deal, or is it the.
Well, what we do is our recommended managers, and a lot of your managers are recommended by our firm. You know, we're meeting with them annually, like on sites, and then what we have is like a, what we call an MMR, which is this big research report that we put together. So we refresh those annually for all our managers that are recommended. So they'll send them to me. Like I get them every, you know, every week I get a few new ones. We refresh this one. Here's the new updated MMR on this manager. And so,
It depends on the manager and what's happened, so if there's organizational changes, they may actually be going out and seeing them more. If it's just same old people saying, you know, you may just do a couple calls to get updated on teams. And then some funds, you know, we like all their products, and some funds there's just one or two products, so it depends on the farm and how many products we really like, what they have, on how much updating we're doing, and work with all of that firm. But, I mean, all your managers, of course, they're sending me correspondence quarterly, like they are you, and so, and their guidelines, they have to sign our policy guidelines, which says, if there's an organization change, they have to communicate with us within 5 to 10 business days. They have to, you know, they have all these communication rules that we set for them in your guidelines that tell them what they have to do. So that's an extra layer of monitoring that they have to do.
Yeah, communication's the key to everything, you know, what's going on.
And you're acting as proxy, right? So then again, my only question would be, are you required to act as proxy in every and all instances of information that you get from your managers to us?
No, I mean, they send you directly information also, not just to us. But the point of me coming quarterly is to report out any changes, anything that's happened, any, you know, if there's a violation of the guidelines they're required to tell us, all those things, that's what I'm reporting out to you quarterly. So, and then if I see something in here, that's why I'm saying to you, hey, bring this in.
All I'm saying is, are you then required, they're required to disclose to you, are you required to disclose to us?
But yeah, I'm required to monitor them all. I mean, that's my okay. My job.
Well,
and I'm a fiduciary. Yeah. Right. Usually, if there's a change in, you know, if there's a change somewhere or something like that, that's big, or there's something going on with them, they let me and Rose know. Usually,
in our research group.
Yeah. Usually.
Rose, in 10.7. I understand what you're saying about half-day accounts. There's all such investment managers and board of funders to make presentations in person. That's the part that...
It's just in person,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we can take care of that just by putting the rest of the managers that the request to the board.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, and we'll still have it applicable to you.
Okay. Thing is, I just don't want somebody coming behind us and saying, you just, the form said you were supposed to be doing X and you never did X. And that's my thing. I just want to make sure what the documents say we're supposed to be doing.
You're okay with taking 19.1 out. The insurance
information.
Oh, you mean out of the deduction? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to delete on page 12, delete the investment return. Net investment return. And on 31, delete the insurance on the deduction. And that will add all the cost of the 42.9. So you can adopt it by motion as amended to those three amendments.
No.
Do it. I'll do a make the changes, do a final, and send it to me.
I feel like I'm at a family dinner. Everyone's on their cell phone. Did everybody hear late?
Yeah, make changes.
So, do you want to accept it with those changes, or do you want to wait until you see it with the changes?
I'd like to. It's just next meeting, right?
Yeah, he'll have it next meeting.
I could accept it.
Ernie?
I'll wait till next meeting.
Guess we'll just wait until next meeting, right? Good deal. Do we have anything else? One second, let's adjourn. I agree.